So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, Text Number 33. Chapter entitled The Marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. Sabharyaha Sapraja Kaman Bhuje Nyavirhodataha Sangyamana Satkirti Sastribi Suragayakai Prati Usheshva Anubadhena Hrida Shrinvan Hare Katha Sabharya Sapraja Kaman Bhujenya Virodataha Sangyamana Satkirti Sastribi Suragayakai Prati Usheshva Anubhadhena Hrida Shrinvan Hare Katha Sabharyaha, along with his wife. Saprajaha, along with his subjects. Kaman, the necessities of life. Bubhuje, he enjoyed. Anya, from others. Avirodataha, without disturbance. Sangiyamana, being praised. Satkirtihi, reputation for pious activities. Sastribhi, along with their wives. Suragayakai, by celestial musicians. Prati Usheshu, at every dawn. Anubadhena, being attached. Hrida, with the heart. Shrinvan, listening to. Hare, of Lord Hari. Katha, the topics. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki? Translation. Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. Celestial musicians and their wives sang in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor. And early in the morning, every day, he used to listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a loving heart. Purport. Human society is actually meant for realization of perfection in Krishna consciousness. There is no restriction against living with a wife and children. But life should be so conducted that one may not go against the principles of religion, economic development, regulated sense enjoyment, and ultimately liberation from material existence. The Vedic principles are designed in such a way that the conditioned souls who have come to this material existence may be guided in fulfilling their material desires and at the same time be liberated and go back to Godhead, back home. It is understood that Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed his household life by following these principles. It is stated here that early in the morning there were musicians who used to sing with musical instruments about the glories of the Lord. And the emperor with his family personally used to hear about the pastimes of the Supreme Person. This custom is still prevalent in India in some of the royal families and temples. Professional musicians sing with shehnais, and the sleeping members of the house gradually get up from their beds in a pleasing atmosphere. During bedtime also, the singers sing songs in relationship with the pastimes of the Lord, with shehnai accompaniment and the householders gradually fall asleep, remembering the glories of the Lord. In every house, in addition to the singing program, there is an arrangement for the Bhagavatam lectures in the evening. Family members sit down, hold Hare Krishna Kirtan, hear narrations from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and enjoy music before going to bed. The atmosphere created by this Sankirtan movement lives in their hearts, and while sleeping, they also dream of the singing and glorification of the Lord. In such a way, perfection of Krishna consciousness can be attained. This practice is very old, as learned from this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Millions of years ago, Swayambhuva Manu used to avail himself of this opportunity to live householder life in the peace and prosperity of a Krishna consciousness atmosphere. As far as temples are concerned, in each and every royal palace or rich man's house, inevitably there is a nice temple, and the members of the household rise early in the morning and go to the temple to see the Mangal Aartik ceremony. The Mangal Aartik ceremony is the first worship of the morning. In the Aartik ceremony, a light is offered in circles before the deities, as are conch shell and flowers and a fan. The Lord is supposed to rise early in the morning and take some light refreshment and give audience to the devotees. The devotees then go back to the house or sing the glories of the Lord in the temple. The early morning ceremony still takes place in Indian temples and palaces. Temples are meant for the assembly of the general public. Temples within palaces are especially for the royal families, but in many of these palace temples, the public is also allowed to visit. The temple of the king of Jaipur is situated within the palace, but the public is allowed to assemble. If one goes there, he will see that the temple is always crowded with at least 500 devotees. After the Mangal Aartik ceremony, they sit down together and sing the glories of the Lord with musical instruments and thus enjoy life. Temple worship by the royal family is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, where it is stated that those who fail to achieve success in the Bhakti Yoga principles within one life are given a chance to take birth in the next life, in a family of rich men, or in a royal family, or family of learned brahmanas or devotees. If one gets the opportunity to take birth in these families, he can achieve the facilities of a Krishna conscious atmosphere without difficulty. A child born in that Krishna atmosphere is sure to develop Krishna consciousness. The perfection which he failed to attain in his last life is again offered in this life, and he can make himself perfect without fail. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So if somebody thinks that this morning program which Srila Prabhupada instituted is something new, they are mistaken. Because from this verse we can see that this morning program has been going on since time immemorial. Swayambhuva Manu would wake up early in the morning, as we heard, accompanied by musicians playing on the shanai and other instruments, singing the glories of the Lord. And that's how he would wake up and then engage in his bhakti practice. So this morning program, which we have in ISKCON temples all over the world, is not something new. And these are eternal religious principles going on since time immemorial. And Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he points out the items of devotional service. And all those items of devotional service are more or less fulfilled in the morning program. So those items of bhakti are carried out in the morning program, right from Mangal Aartik till we have prasadam, right? Till we have breakfast. singing for the pleasure of the Lord. We wake up the Lord also with prayers early in the morning. So Swayambhuva Manu, as we heard in this chapter, he is a Grihastha, and he went to the sage Kardama Muni to hand over his daughter. He wanted his daughter to get married to him. So after Kardama Muni accepted his proposal, he came back to his palace or his home. And here it is described that how Swayambhuva Manu is enjoying life in the Grihastha ashram. So we see majority of people in this world, they are householders, right? If we look around in the world, we'll see most people are living as households. And there are so many houses, which means there are householders in there. So that's the nature of this world. The conditioned soul is attracted towards sense gratification. And if that sense gratification is not, if that propensity for sense gratification is not purified, it leads to bondage and misery. As Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he explains that the mode of passion is, it leads to misery. So the mode of passion is characterized by fruitive results, primarily characterized by fruitive results. And we see people in this world, they are very fruitive. And in all their daily activities, they are engaged in very fruitively. If there's nothing in it for them, they won't do it. But this tendency for sense gratification has to be purified. Otherwise, it leads to bondage. So householder life is based on sense gratification. It is based on the mode of passion, but this has to be purified in Krishna consciousness. So in this verse, it's very nicely described how householders can enjoy their life, but at the same time get purified. And we see that in some of the paths, like in Karma Yoga, in Ashtanga Yoga, and in Ashtanga Yoga, and we see in Jnana Yoga, that one of the prerequisites for practicing is that one has to be a celibate. But in Bhakti Yoga, one can take up to spiritual life even if one is a householder. And in fact, even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it doesn't matter whether one is a householder, whether one is a Grihastha, a Vanaprastha, a Sannyasi, or a Brahmachari. It doesn't matter. The main thing is to practice bhakti. Grihetako, vanetako, sadahari bolo. So it doesn't matter. Regardless of one's ashram, if one is practicing Krishna consciousness, one is a devotee. So in Bhakti Yoga, the prerequisite is not to be a celibate. So here, Swayambhuva Manu is enjoying life with his wife and subjects, and he fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. So in the modern context, we see that people don't know how to be happy. Because, as I said before, happiness is based on the mode of passion. What gives the senses pleasure right now, that is happiness. So that's how happiness is seen. How can I get pleasure right now? If something doesn't make you happy right now, then give it up, find something else. And in this way, the standard of happiness is always changing, and people are seeking for newer and newer ways to be happy. And Srila Prabhupada, in the Nectar of Devotion, he describes that Krishna consciousness is all auspicious. And Srila Prabhupada there, he describes that a devotee, he doesn't need to go to nightclubs, and engage in so many varied ways of sense gratification to get some pleasure. And Srila Prabhupada there, he describes that even if a devotee, even from the material point of view, if he's uneducated, still he can restrain from all these other activities. He can restrain from these nightclubs, this, that, so many different ways of sense gratification are there. So a devotee can be very simple, sit down, chant Hare Krishna, and you know, come to the temple, engage in the process of devotional service in the association of devotees. Sometimes people ask us, what do you do for fun? Have you been asked that question? I've been certainly asked many times. So, you Hare Krishnas, what do you do for fun? I said, well, we go to the temple. I go to the temple. And what are you doing over the weekend? Sometimes we ask this question. What are you going to do this weekend? And I ask them, what are you doing? So they tell me all the plans. I'm going to X, Y, Z. Then we're going there, and we're going there. I'm doing this, going to this place, that place. And they say, so what are your plans? So every week the plans are the same. So yeah, the plan is go to the temple. And we go to an outreach center, and be there. So they think life is very boring. So for non-devotees, it's very difficult to understand how devotees can get pleasure from just doing the same activities again and again. So, you know, it's very, very difficult to comprehend. But this is the mysticism of Bhakti Yoga. So we can come to the temple every day, or if we can't come to the temple, if you're living far, we can perform those same activities at home. Then, you know, we get together once or twice a week, or those who live close to temple, you know, much more than that. Then we do our preaching, and in this way our life goes on. Our Krishna conscious life goes on. So life is very simple. So Krishna consciousness is all auspicious. And Prabhupada, he says that even a young boy who from the material point of view is uneducated can do these activities. He can give up smoking, drinking, you know, all other negative activities, they can give it up. So that is the potency of Krishna conscious life. And householder life is also more or less based on hearing and chanting. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita in the fourth chapter, he says that the unadulterated brahmacharis, they sacrifice, what's that verse? I don't want to speculate. I'll read out exactly. Do you know what verse is it in the fourth chapter? Who's been reading Bhagavad Gita regularly? Yes. Yes, maybe you'd like to tell us. Do you remember the translation? Yes, yes. Mataji is very expert in shlokas. She teaches so many young children to recite shlokas and learn shlokas. So Mataji knows so many shlokas off her head. It's amazing. They're very, very inspiring. So does anyone remember the verse? The brahmachari should know that. At least the brahmachari should know this verse. 426, there we go. And there we go. So 426. I remember when I was in the Brahmachari Ashram, and I'm a bad example. I don't remember this verse. Yes, there it is. Thanks, Mataji, for the shloka. Some, the unadulterated brahmachari, sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control. And others, the regulated householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. So the brahmacharis, the main program for the brahmacharis is to absorb their mind in hearing and chanting. And by doing that, that's how they control the mind and the senses. So for those who are in the renounced order of life, that's their only engagement. there's no other engagement. Not saying that, you know, all day you just hear and chant, don't do service. But it is primarily based on hearing and chanting. And for householders, it is mentioned here that they sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. So for householders, they are engaged in so many activities. Whereas we see for those in the renounced order of the life, they have the facility and opportunity to just absorb their consciousness in hearing and chanting. So, you know, right from the getting up, coming to the morning program, chanting, listening to kirtan, reading shastra. So those who are in the renounced order of life have this facility. They should make the most of it while they have it. And we see some even go the distance. So there's this very good facility to hear every day. So I know so many brahmacharis, they read minimum of 2 hours a day. And in this way, they absorb their consciousness. They're hearing lectures while doing service and coming to so many programs. This wonderful facility is there. And for the householders, the field of activities is very broad. And naturally, one has to hear and chant about so many other subject matters also, apart from Krishna Katha, because that's just the way of life. So it is harder, but still, as I was saying, the main point is householder life is also based on hearing and chanting. In fact, there's a very nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati Bhaktir Uttama Shloket Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Thank you. So there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, second chapter, it is stated that one has to hear this Bhagavatam on a regular basis. It is said Nityam. Nityam means regularly. So in fact, even on a daily basis, one has to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So one has to associate with the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat on a regular basis. And by doing that, all the abhadreshu, all the inauspicious things in the heart, are destroyed. So by engaging in this process of Krishna consciousness, that's why Srila Prabhupada, we see he instituted this Srimad Bhagavatam class in ISKCON temples. So this is hearing from the book Bhagavat. So we hear the book Bhagavat, and the person Bhagavat, he speaks from the book Bhagavat and shares his realizations. So this is the process which Srila Prabhupada has set. And by doing this, all the abhadreshu in the heart is destroyed. And then one attains pure devotional service. So this is the process. It is very simple. And here we are seeing Swayambhuva Manu is also doing that. Swayambhuva Manu, he is engaging in the process of Krishna consciousness. He has Bhagavatam class, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned, also on a daily basis. And here Srila Prabhupada says that Grihasthas, they should not go against the principles of Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. If one goes against the principles of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, then one will not be happy. Modern society, we see that people don't even know what Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha is. Let alone understanding Krishna Bhakti, which is beyond Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. In the third chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he explains the process of sacrifice. Krishna explains that if one doesn't offer sacrifice, one cannot be happy. One will not get the necessities of life. And Krishna explains that we are the human society, human beings are receiving so much facility from the demigods. We are receiving the necessities of life. So we have to express the gratitude by offering it back, by offering the demigods in sacrifice. And when the demigods are pleased, they offer the necessities of life and prosperity reigns for all. So in the modern context, they are not aware of these laws of nature. They're not aware of how how this functions, that there is universal management, that nature is not functioning by itself. And modern society, they're trying to find the solutions to the problems by their own endeavors. And in fact, things are getting more and more complicated. The solutions which modern society is coming up is complicating things further and further, and we're getting further and further entangled. But one has to engage in this process of Krishna consciousness. So we see that grihasthas, we also do all these things. What is dharma for us? It's said, savai pumsan paro dharma yato bhakti radokshade ahituki apratiyata yayatma suprasidati. So the highest occupation of dharma is to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord without any motivation. Constantly and without motivation. And by doing this, one can attain Krishna consciousness. So that is dharma for us. And of course, this is beyond mundane dharma. And Srimad Bhagavatam, it rejects mundane dharma. In the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, it sweeps out mundane dharma. So as householders and as devotees, we do that. And for dharma, artha means economic development. So those who are in householder life, they have to engage in economic development. No money, no money, no honey. There's a saying. So we need money to live. We need money for sustenance, and we have to work. That's the way this world is made. Everyone has to work. Only Krishna plays his flute and enjoys. So Srila Prabhupada, he gives this example. One time there was this German gentleman. He went to all the temples in India. And he said, you know, this Krishna temple is very interesting. Here I'm seeing God is simply playing on his flute and he's enjoying. Other places I see, you know, there is work. So Krishna is enjoying. He plays his flute and he's enjoying pastimes with his loving pastimes with his devotees. But for us in this world, we have to work. So work should be performed in such a way, work should be performed honestly. We have to engage in our occupational duty honestly, to the best of our capacity, and use the results of our work for Krishna conscious activities, to further Krishna consciousness. So we saw that last week, devotees very generously, they opened their hearts and they contributed towards building of a new kitchen. So that's a very nice example of using one's results for spreading of Krishna consciousness. And of course, we have to engage in occupations which are not directly connected to sinful activities. So the four pillars of sinful life are meat-eating, intoxication, gambling and illicit sex. So one's occupation should not be connected to these four pillars of sin directly. Of course, indirectly, all are connected. No matter what you do, somehow they are connected. But we should not directly be engaged in these professions. And as far as karma goes, karma means a sense gratification. So in Krishna consciousness, sense gratification is regulated. Especially the householder life is called grihastha ashram. So here sense gratification is regulated. There is a license, as Srila Prabhupada says, license for enjoyment. So one's activities in householder life are restricted. There is enjoyment, but it is in a restricted way. And in today's society, the conception of marriage or the institution of marriage is becoming more and more foreign. Yes, people do get married, but it is, if you look, the majority of people don't get married. So the very institution of marriage is becoming a very foreign idea. But in a civilized society, marriage is there, because it leads, it instills a sense of responsibility, and the main thing is it is a sacrifice for the pleasure of Vishnu. I remember my spiritual master, His Holiness Devamrita Swami, when he came to our wedding ceremony here in the temple, he was giving a lecture for those who were present. And he made a very interesting statement. He said, this is partnership in enlightenment. He summed it up very nicely in one sentence. He said, this is partnership in enlightenment. So we're trying to live to that. But yes, that's what marriage is about. That's what the institution of marriage is about. It is helping each other to become Krishna conscious. And then moksha for devotees. As Srila Bilwa Mangala Thakur, he says, Mukti Svayam Mukulitanjali Sevate Asman. Srila Bilwa Mangala Thakur, he says that liberation becomes subservient to the devotee. And in fact, Mukti stands before the devotee and is ready to render all kinds of services to the devotee. So for devotees, liberation is not a big thing. For us, our goal is not liberation. Our goal is not moksha. For devotees, the goal is Krishna Prem. That's the goal for devotees, is Krishna Prem. And when one gets Krishna Prem, one automatically gets liberation. That is a byproduct of Krishna Prem. But for the impersonalists, moksha is a very big thing. And they get offended sometimes when we minimize moksha. So impersonalists, they can get offended when we minimize the position of moksha. But for devotees, real liberation means to attain love of Godhead. That's real liberation. And not only does mukti become subservient to the devotee, but we see by the unalloyed love and affection of the devotees, even Krishna becomes subservient to his dear devotees. And the very example is on the cover of the Bhagavad Gita is Partha Sarathi. One of Krishna's names is Partha Sarathi. And the ISKCON New Delhi temple is also called Sri Sri Radha Partha Sarathi, right? So Krishna, he became the charioteer of Arjuna. It's very, very interesting that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything, the controller of everyone, the proprietor of everything, becomes the servant of his devotee. And Senayor Ubayor Madhe Stapyam Atho Stapyam Achyuta. Thank you. Very nice. So Arjuna, he said, my dear Krishna, please draw this chariot in the midst of the two armies. So we can see Krishna is Partha Sarathi. He obeyed Arjuna's command. This is God. You know, generally, and just imagine the CEO of Apple, okay? The CEO of Apple, Tim Cook. He, you know, one of his employees, and he becomes the driver of his employee. The CEO will have a chauffeur-driven car. Even in I see outside Crossfair sometimes, when I'm coming back from work, I see that the Lord Mayor's car is there. It says LM000, something like this. And there's a flag of the Victorian government. And it's a chauffeur-driven car. It's a big statesman, white color. And Robert Doyle, he comes out, and the door is open for him. He sits and he goes. Now just imagine, Robert Doyle is sitting in the driver's seat, and then the chauffeur is sitting at the back, or his friend is sitting at the back, and he's driving him around. He opens the door for him and says, where would you like to go today? So that is a very humble position to take. It's a very menial service. But Krishna, as Partha Sarathi, out of affection for his devotee, he becomes subservient. So that is the glory of devotional service, that not only is mukti subservient to the devotee, but even Krishna himself becomes conquered by the love of his devotees. Yes. In a ward, that's right.
It's not just out in the city, you know, quietly in the back, and Krishna's just driving him around.
He's constantly shouting.
Ordering Krishna around. Stop, go, left, right.
That's right, yeah, that's right. That's right, thank you, yeah. It's not just, you know, once he said, take me in the midst of both the armies, and then once the war started, it's like constant. Constant orders. That's, yeah, thank you for mentioning that. That's very important point in elaborating. So yeah, that's, you can see that Krishna is constantly taking orders, one after the other. You can imagine the intensity of the orders also. It's Krishna is like, maybe Arjuna is shouting, do this, do that. And when you are in such a tense environment, sometimes one can even be rude, unknowingly. And Arjuna, when he realized Krishna's position, when he saw the universal form, he said, oh my Lord, you know, what I've committed so many offenses. We sat together, we sat on the same bed, we dined together, and we joked together, and you know, I didn't know you were the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you can see that Arjuna in love, as Mataji pointed out, Krishna was taking such orders. And here we can see Swayambhuva Manu. Every morning he would wake up with musicians playing the shanai and other instruments. So a king, that's how kings wake up. And here also it's said that the musicians would sing in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor. So his glories were being sung, and then the glories of the Lord were also sung, and that's how he would wake up. Very, very pleasant way of waking up. Rather than, in, you know, alarm going, ta 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 ta. It suddenly sounds like the building is on fire. There's a fire alarm going on. I remember in the Brahmachari ashram one time, my dear God Brother Krishnagrada, and we used to be in the same room. So one time, on my iPhone, can't remember what phone, maybe it was iPhone, yeah. So I put an alarm of a wolf howling. So at 3:30 the wolf went off, you know, ow, like that. And because he grew up in Mayapur, he lived in the Gurukul, and there were wolves there. If you go to Mayapur even today, you can hear the wolves howling early in the morning. Sometimes, if you are in Vamsi Bhavan or around there. So anyway, this wolf went off, started howling, and then he woke up. You know, he remembered his days, and he wasn't very happy. And he chastised me very heavily. He said, this is very inauspicious, what you have done. So, you know, it's much better to wake up in a, you know, when instruments are playing, the holy name is being chanted. It's a very pleasant way, rather than, you know, these artificial alarms going off. I remember when I went to Chaupati for a few weeks, when I used to live in the ashram, on a break I went there with my spiritual master. And in Chaupati temple, it's a big temple, but there's lots of brahmacharis. So the way you can sleep is very scarce. The floor space to sleep is, the real estate of sleeping is very, very scarce. So you have to grab your spot very quickly. If you're not early to grab your space, it's gone. So the premium places to sleep are, you know, in the Brahmachari ashram around there. So there, Brahmacharis, they lay their mat and also the net, and they sleep in that. So if you're not there early enough, it's gone. And then the next place is the roof. And so the Brahmacharis, they sleep on the roof. And if not there, then some sleep in the temple room. And there's also two rooms adjacent to the temple room. They're like the halls. The doors open and they become temple rooms. If there's not enough people, then those doors are closed. And there, different activities are carried out during the day. So even there, the Brahmacharis, they sleep. So many times I was not early enough. Sometimes we would come back from programs. And then either I would sleep on the roof or I would sleep in those adjoining rooms. And the last aarti is going on at 9 p.m. You know, the aarti goes on. And as you're sleeping, you can hear the kirtan going on. It's very nice. When you're going to bed, you can hear live kirtan. It's a very nice way of going to bed. I still remember that. And you can hear the holy name, very melodious way they're singing. It's not because it's the Shrine Aarti, right? Yeah. So it's very sweet and it's not like wampus banging. So it's you can go to bed. So in that way, one can remember the Lord while going to bed, and then one can dream of Krishna. For those of you who have, if you have gone to Mayapur, Melbourne Temple has a room there. It's called the Melbourne Room. And that is in the Conch building. It's on the fourth floor, I think. It's a big room, very nice facility, which Melbourne Temple has. So if you're fortunate enough to stay there, in the Conch building, in that room, every night you can hear the kirtan going on as you go to sleep. And as you wake up, if you wake up late, you can hear the Mangal Aarti going on. So it's a very nice way of waking up. And here we can see the Swayambhuva Manu. Of course, he was a king and he was very wealthy. He could have that facility where musicians would sing his glories and they would also play instruments and sing about the pastimes of the Lord. And that way he would rise every morning and he would go to bed. So it's very, very nice. And it's a very nice culture. One can remember Krishna. So we also have that facility now with advancement in technology. In our phones, we can set the alarm in such a way that in the holy names come on. You can choose the file these days in your phone, what file you want to play, what music you want to play. So we can have a kirtan. I know some of my godbrothers, they have their spiritual master's voice comes on in the morning. Om Agyana Timirandasya. So it's a very nice way of waking up and a nice way of going to bed also. So Swayambhuva Manu was also was doing this. And Swayambhuva Manu had a temple in the palace. We see wealthy people, and especially the kings, they would have a temple in their, a magnificent temple in their palace. We see today when so many householders, devotees have, those who have big enough houses, they have one room dedicated as the temple room. Recently I went to Bhakta Prabhu and Bhakti Mataji's home. They have very big deities, almost as big as Sri Sri Radha Vallabha. Bigger or slightly smaller, yeah. So it's very, very nice. You feel like you're in the temple, and it is the temple. You are in the temple. So and you can imagine in the days of yore how kings, what kind of temple they would have, because they have so much facility and opulence. They would have magnificent temples. And they would engage priests. And even as is mentioned here, the common man was also allowed to go to these temples. Even today in Jaipur, is it Radha Govind temple? That's in the palace, right? And I think that's the temple Srila Prabhupada is talking about here. So you can go there in the palace, and a common person like us can go there and avail of the benefits. So Krishna, he would wake up very early also. That's another point Srila Prabhupada makes here. Swayambhuva Manu would wake up very early. So rising early is very important, because waking up early is, rising early and engaging in sadhana bhakti is the best time to do it, because that's when one can be the most attentive of all times during the day, because there is very less distractions. People who want to disturb us are all sleeping. You know, your boss won't ring you early in the morning. Though sometimes it does happen that you get a call and, hey, come to work, you know, log on your computer. But generally speaking, people who want to disturb you are all in bed. And you can engage in your sadhana bhakti attentively. So Swayambhuva Manu was also doing that. And Krishna, in his every morning, when Krishna was living in Dwarka, he would rise very early in the morning by the sound, by hearing the sound of the rooster. So the rooster would start singing, and Krishna, he was in the association of his beautiful wives, he was embraced by them, but he would get up during Brahma Muhurta, and he would then get up and meditate on himself. Of course, we can't do that. We have to get up and meditate on Krishna, not on ourselves. There are some people who do that. They're meditating on themselves, or on the breath, or on the candle. We have to meditate on Krishna by chanting japa. By chanting japa, singing the Guru Vastakam prayers, Guru Vandanam, Kirtan, and like this we meditate on Krishna. So Krishna himself set this example of waking up early and engaging in, because if he doesn't do it, others won't do it. And even Srila Prabhupada, when Srila Prabhupada was a young boy, Srila Prabhupada's, do you know Srila Prabhupada's father's name? Who remembers? Gaur Mohan De. So, the De, Gaur Mohan De, he was very intimately related to the Malik family. And the Malik family, they were merchants. In other words, they were businessmen. And for many, many years, for many hundreds of years, they were trading in gold and salt with the Britishers. So they had acquired a lot of fortune. They were very big, they were like business magnates. And the Malik family, they were the Gotra, and they were related to the De family. And there was even a marriage between them. So their ties were very consolidated. And so the Malik family, they had a temple, a Radha Govinda temple, in which there were Radha Krishna deities. So this temple was owned by the Maliks. And in fact, they even owned many properties on Harrison Road. So Srila Prabhupada, he grew up in 151 Harrison Road in Calcutta. That was the Indian side of, you know, this was back in the British days. So this was the Indian side of Calcutta. So there Srila Prabhupada, he grew up in 151 Harrison Road. And many properties on Harrison Road, they were owned by the Maliks. And they had this temple there. And this temple was supported by local businesses. It's very interesting. This temple had its own economy. Like this temple in, like ISKCON Melbourne also has its own economy. Crossways, Gopals, catering. So, and then they had gardens. They were growing their own vegetables. And I believe they had their own cows also. So Srila Prabhupada, from a very young age, he was going to this temple of the Maliks. So we can see another example how very rich people, they would have temples. And they would engage priests in maintaining that temple. And such temples would be open for the common man to go. And even, who is it? Is it Sanatan Goswami? Radha Madan Mohan Temple? Sanatan Goswami, he encouraged a wealthy merchant to build this temple, right? So there are many examples where rich people, back in the day, even going back 30, 40, 50 years ago, very wealthy people, they would fund many temples. They would fund the construction of such temples, or they would make sure they operate. And even Srila Prabhupada, when he went to America in the early days in New York, he was constantly in, can't remember the name of this gentleman, but he was in touch with a gentleman in India, and he wanted him to buy them this temple, this building in New York, in which Srila Prabhupada wanted to have a Radha Krishna temple. But because of so many other difficulties, it wasn't, I think, possible. So we can see that rich people, they are inclined to, back then, open temples and establish this. And saintly persons would encourage them. In the Nectar Devotion, it is said that one in the renounced order of life should not, I think, open many temples or construct temples. So they encourage the rich people to open these temples. So temple worship is very important, as it's mentioned here. Temple worship is very significant because temple worship gives the common man the opportunity to become Krishna conscious. So without this temple, none of us would be sitting here today. It is Srila Prabhupada who came to the West. He preached very boldly. He opened 108 temples in a very short span of time. And he empowered others to open more and more temples all over the world. And it is by his mercy this temple is established and we are sitting here today. So devotees worked very hard back then and we are enjoying the fruit of their labor. So we have this wonderful opportunity of this temple. So the prime business of a temple, as Srila Prabhupada said, it is an educational institution. It is a place where Krishna bhakti is imparted, where there is regular katha going on, classes going on, bhakti shastris, education, and there is deity worship going on. And the temple is a base from where the preaching is planned and also carried out. That's what temples are for. And that's why Srila Prabhupada, he established this temple. And for devotees, this is our life. The temple, coming to temple, going to outreach centers, that's our life. And this is also where all our social interactions take place. Of course, the main purpose of the temple is not to facilitate social interactions amongst devotees. But that happens by itself. Because when devotees come here, naturally we'll mingle with each other. And then we'll interact and help each other out materially as well. So that naturally occurs. But that's not the prime purpose of a temple. The prime purpose of a temple is to facilitate hearing and chanting and our advancement and opportunities to engage in devotional service. So I just like to end here and sum up the class that one can engage in Krishna consciousness as a householder. One doesn't need to be in any ashram. And the householder ashram is very favorable for developing Krishna consciousness, and in Kali Yuga especially. And one should always remember the Lord by engaging in hearing and chanting and try to dovetail one's life. So are there any questions or comments on this subject matter? Yes, Mataji. Yes, okay. Thank you. As it's mentioned here and in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, Srila Prabhupada said that for grihasthas, they should engage in economic development in an honest way, as much as possible. And also, every morning and evening, get together with the family and have some Krishna katha. As it's mentioned here that one should also engage in deity worship, primarily. For grihasthas, deity worship is very important. Because for grihasthas, it's very easy to fall in the bodily conception of life. Because we are engaged in so many... We engage with the material energy a lot. We interact with the material energy a lot. So it is very easy to be influenced by the material energy. So by engaging in deity worship, one can overcome the bodily conception of life, and one very firmly establishes that, it very firmly establishes in one's consciousness that we are a servant of the Lord. Because if you're serving the deity, what does it mean? You're a servant of the Lord. You're a servant. So that it ingrains in one's consciousness. So for householders, Srila Prabhupada recommended, if you're living near the temple, to make the temple deities as your deities and render service on a regular basis if one is twice initiated. If one is living far away, not close, one cannot come on a regular basis, then one should have deities at home and engage in regular worship. And then Srila Prabhupada also mentioned that as a family unit, one should get together, a wife, child and husband, get together on a regular basis, have some kirtan, read Bhagavad Gita, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and to the best of one's ability, do some preaching. So that's the... Would you like to add anything to that?
That was one specifically Prabhupada said that, you know, Grihastha should
be deity worship.
It's a point that we often
forget. That's right.
We see how this form has expanded the world, and you know, it is such land of communities and modern temples, that even here in Melbourne, you know, we have a lot of Brahmins, and yet we rely on a few cool Brahmins.
That's right.
Deity worship.
Yes. That's right, yeah.
So it's important for every Brahmana to try and adjust their schedule so that it fits somebody which really establishes a strong relationship with the deity and encourage you through the difficult times in your life. That close relationship with Krishna will carry you through difficult times in your life.
That's right, thank you. Yeah. Even if we have our deities at home, still we should render some deity worship at the temple, because these are our Melbourne deities. These are the community deities. These are deities which Srila Prabhupada personally established, you know, all of them. Srila Prabhupada personally installed Sri Sri Gaurinathai, Radha Ballabha, Jagannath Baldev Subhadra. So, you know, we have to, this wonderful opportunity to worship them directly if we can. If one is twice initiated, one should do it. And as Mataji pointed out, and herself and Bhakta Prabhu are a very good example. They have deities at home, but they come on a very regular basis to the temple and worship the temple deities. They could have a very good excuse, I don't need to come, I have deities at home, but they come. So it just, if there's 50 or 60 Brahmanas in the community, if everyone just takes up one service, it's all taken care of. Just one service. Even if everyone takes up one service, whether it's a Mangal Arati or Gaurinathai bathing, or dressing, or fruit offering, or anything related to the deities, paraphernalia service, or whatever. If we take up one service, then it's not just core devotees, the 5-7 core brahmanas doing it. Of course, they are very fortunate to do it, but others should also take avail of the opportunity. That's right. Yes. Yeah, so there you go.
This example of Swayambhuraman is very, very good. Even as a household, how that will not restrict in doing acting to the Lord.
Yes.
How his consciousness was so completely Krishna conscious. Mm. So the main thing is consciousness is important, whether whichever has to be Rasta Ashram is so nice to hear this, that in the morning all the glories of the Lord here.
Mm. Okay, so if I understand your question correctly, you're asking that when making the transition to Grihastha Ashram, how to deal with the material energy. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, like
specifically the mode of passion. Yeah, as a grihastha, one has to deal with the material energy a lot. So your question is how to overcome that challenge? Is that your question? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's much easier being a single man or lady. It's one is just absorbed in devotional service, and one doesn't have to worry about livelihood. But when it comes to livelihood, then yes, we have to deal with the material energy a lot. And that takes up a lot of time. And it is very easy to become fruitive also. Very easy to become fruitive. Because that fruitive tendency is very strongly ingrained in us. That's why we are in the material world. So that really comes out, you know, when you're dealing with the material energy. So the main thing is one has to have a strong program of hearing and chanting. Devotees who regularly hear and chant, they are much more fixed than those who don't hear and chant regularly. And they are much more less affected than those who don't have a strong sadhana program. So by regular hearing and chanting, and also by not only hearing and chanting in isolation, but also in the association of devotees, coming to the temple, hearing classes, and doing service in the association of devotees. The program is the same, is whichever ashram you are in. Just one has to do it as much as we can. So when we do that, and also taking guidance from one spiritual master and other senior Vaishnavas regarding very practical things also, like one's profession. Sometimes engaging in certain professions might not be suitable, you know, to one's spiritual life, or certain circumstances might not be very suitable. So then one has to tweak those, adjust it, so we can carry on Krishna consciousness, so we can carry on our sadhana. And also to have a strong desire. If we have a strong desire, Krishna arranges the circumstances somehow. It just happens. So if one is serious about Krishna consciousness, Krishna gives the facility where one can, even though working out there, engaging with the material energy, still one will have facility to hear and chant. It's possible. The Lord does it. So it's not all our endeavor. We just have to be sincere, have the best intentions, and try our best. Then leave the rest to Krishna. And Krishna arranges for our maintenance. Those who are very young, they are fortunate. But for many of us, we came very late. We didn't have that 25-year. We didn't have the benefit of the first 25 years being a devotee. And even not everyone gets the opportunity to be like a brahmachari, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We have seen so many grihastha devotees who have taken to bhakti when they were grihasthas, but they're very, very serious. So if one has a strong desire, it doesn't matter. But of course, it's better to have that. But I think for most in this room, we haven't had that opportunity. That's right. And he says, whenever we realize the urgency of Krishna consciousness, we should take to it. Thank you. Right. Prabhuji, do you have any comments or questions or corrections? Yes, Rahul. Thank you for encouragement.
To make this thing happen, is it not very important that devotees try to stay near to the temple?
I moved far away. yes, it's better to live near the temple. If possible, it's better to live. Right now you're single, it's much easier. But when you're married, it's a different story. And if you notice, the rents here are very high. In Albert, very few people can. Of course, devotees can. There are many devotees who live here. If one is prepared to sacrifice a big space and all that comfort for a small apartment, sure. And everyone has different needs. We can't just make one program, fit for all devotees. So one should live close to the temple as much as possible. So you have to see the practicality also. We have a facility where we can hear every day, live, Nityam Bhagavatam. Aniruddha Prabhu has made this facility available through our phones. But yes, it is better to hear, be in the class. But for so many devotees, I know it's not practical to come here every day, those who are working. Yeah, it's not practical. So yeah, just do our best. So we are very lucky to... with this final point, we'll end. We are very lucky to have this facility to hear through technology. And of course, one should not go 3 hours away. Be as close to the temple as possible. Yes, Madhuri, and then we'll end with this. Yeah. Was that there? That's right. That's right, yeah. They just don't know what we are doing. And one time, I had a friend who came here early in the morning, and he wanted to see what I do. So he came and he saw that morning we're having so much, it was kirtan, it was like rocking. Bumpers going on with two devotees on mirdanga. It was like, we're shaking the roof. And he said, I didn't know that you can have so much fun. That this is without taking any intoxicants. Even in Rath Yatra, I remember this last Rath Yatra in February this year. I remember when Braj Krishna Prabhu was leaving the kirtan towards the end on the stage, and the Harinam Ruchi group, they pulled so many people from everywhere. And all these people chanting and dancing. And then after the whole program finished, Braj Krishna said, look, we had so much fun, but we were not on drugs or we were not taking any alcohol. And everyone agreed with him. They cheered. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, people just don't know how much fun it is in just doing these simple activities. Thank you. Right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.